KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. Cheryl Strayed is the best-selling author of Wild, about her solo journey on the Pacific Crest Trail, and Tiny Beautiful Things, a book based on her experience as the advice columnist Dear Sugar. Reese Witherspoon played Strayed in the movie version of Wild, and thanks to various adaptations of Tiny Beautiful Things, Strayed has had a chance to see even more versions of herself on stage and screen.
Every time I see another person playing me or Sugar, I think that we live our lives originally, but the experiences we have, the big significant experiences we have, are timeless and universal. And so I love that I get to kind of feel that in action in the form of all of these people playing versions of me.
In the new Hulu series, Tiny Beautiful Things, Katherine Hahn plays the character loosely based on Strayed. To adapt the book, Reese Witherspoon's production company, Hello Sunshine, matched Strayed with series creator and showrunner Liz Tigelaar. Strayed and Tigelaar join us today. But first we banter. Stick around. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my associate in banter, Matt Bellany. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So, as long predicted, the writers are on strike now. They have some issues that, as expressed by Danny Strong, who's been on this show more than once, most recently he was the talent behind Dopesick. This is an existential fight in view of the writers. There are multiple issues, of course, but two of the big ones have to do with allegations the writers are making that the studios are basically trying to turn the profession of writer into a gig rather than a job. And another big thing, of course, is AI. And the fact that the writers wanted to talk about it and the studios offered this thing like, we can have a meeting that was not committing to anything, I think must have put that on the writer's radar so much more than it initially was, because it probably seemed like something down the road. And all of a sudden, the studios seem to be, as I just read, actually asking whether it's something that could be hurried up. So the writers feel very threatened by that as well.
Yeah, and let's be honest, there are a lot of issues they are far apart on. I mean, even the money stuff, you know, the writers are proposing pretty significant residual and minimums increases. The studios have come back with much lower numbers. Those are more traditional negotiations that probably could have been worked out if they continued talking. But what the writers say is that the studios aren't even willing to engage on some of these pretty existential issues, like, will writers' rooms exist in the future? And will the studios be able to deploy artificial intelligence to either help with or create scripts on their own? And that's what's pretty surprising here, if you believe the writer's side, that the studios wouldn't engage, because it seems like kind of an easy give when nobody really knows what AI is going to be capable of.
Well, I don't know how easy it is. I mean, and again, I take your point that we are dealing with two parties in combat now, and rhetoric tends to get very heated, and people come at each other in a way that makes it hard for us in the press to kind of walk through objectively without sounding one way or the other. I know another issue that I probably should have mentioned at the beginning, and I know you know how important it is transparency about how shows and movies are performing. You know, movies that are theatrically released is not a big deal, but the streamers have kept a lot of information to themselves, and the writers are no longer participating in huge successes the way they used to. And I know you and I have both felt for a while that we would like more transparency ourselves, and that it's going to have to be. I mean, this whole battle is kind of, as Danny Strong said, existential in a number of ways, and it's been brewing for a long time.
True. And arguably, the transparency issue is at the core of all of this, because if the writers had a better sense of how their content did on these platforms, and if these platforms paid residuals based on how well the content was doing and not based on subscriber numbers or some other esoteric number, then I think the writers would at least feel like they were on an even footing ground to make a deal or to argue. And they don't even feel like they have access to the key information needed to make a fair deal. And that's, I think, leading to a lot of the animosity and insecurity on the writer's side. The balance of information here is absolutely favoring the studios. And the only recourse the writers have is to go on strike.
So they clearly feel. And I think going forward, the big question is going to be, how do the other guilds react? SAG-AFTRA has expressed support for the writers and asked members to picket with the writers. And of course, there's a lot of that going on right now. The Teamsters don't cross picket lines. So the impact of that, we're not so sure quite yet how that plays out, I think. The big question also will be the directors, which in the past, the Directors Guild has made deals. And the last time the writers went on strike in 2007, that was undercut, ended after 100 days because the directors made a deal and the writers then felt like they couldn't carry on.
Right. And that's why I think the most optimistic scenario here for the strike ending is probably in July, because the directors and the actors, their deals are not even up until the end of June. And they're just now starting to get into negotiation mode. And the studios really have an incentive to make a deal with the directors in particular, because that's what they see as their leverage to go after the writers. If the writers see that the directors made a deal, then it gives the writers less leverage in their battle with the studios. So if everything goes right and these other two guilds can make deals, I think the writers then see that and they come to an agreement maybe in July. If not, and these two other guilds go on strike, we could be looking at months and months of work stoppage.
I mean, we could be looking at a total shutdown of Hollywood if the other guilds jump in. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, a founding partner of Puck News. For showrunner Liz Tigelar and executive producer Cheryl Strayed, Hulu's Tiny Beautiful Things is the product of years of working with Reese Witherspoon and her production company, Hello Sunshine. In 2012, Strayed published two New York Times best-selling novels within months of each other. Wild was made into a 2014 film starring Witherspoon. Now, Tiny Beautiful Things has been adapted into a limited series starring Katherine Hahn as a version of Strayed. To bring this story to the screen, Witherspoon's company paired Strayed with Liz Tigelar, a veteran of two other Hello Sunshine series, Little Fires Everywhere and The Morning Show. Tiny Beautiful Things follows Katherine Hahn's Claire, a wife and mother who, in a moment of desperation, writes to advice columnist Dear Sugar. She has no inkling that this is a step that will lead to her being hired to write the Dear Sugar column herself, as Cheryl Strayed did in real life.
My life is a mess, Sugar. My daughter hates me. My husband kicked me out a few nights ago. And he thinks I'm crashing on my best friend's couch, but I'm not. I'm sitting on her stoop, waiting for an Uber. Pool. Wondering how the hell my life ended up here. Looking for comfort from a woman I don't even know. And also wondering, has anyone ever written in to offer comfort to you?
With many writer-producers declining to promote shows due to the ongoing strike, we note that Tigelar participated in this interview before the work stoppage began. So, Cheryl, I remember very vividly when Stacey Snyder, and I can't quite remember where she was at that point, he was an executive at one of the companies, sent me your book, Wild, and said, you have to read this. I'm enthralled with this book. And so good. And she did send it to me and I read it. And so when was that? That must have been like, I mean, it just come out probably, right?
The book was published in March of 2012. And then it was quickly followed by Tiny Beautiful Things in July of 2012. So yeah, Wild 11 years ago, Tiny Beautiful Things almost 11 years ago.
Quite a roll. I mean, that book, Oprah picks it for her. She does a whole thing with you, right? It's like an hour of Oprah time talking about you and the book.
Yeah, I think it was like more like 2 hours of Oprah
2 hours.
Time.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. You're right.
It was very exciting.
I mean, at that point, was that just like this sudden cyclone that came into your life with the book?
Yes, it's interesting that you use a weather metaphor because, yes, what the word I used for the year of 2012 was like, it was like a hurricane, you know, in my life. And what was crazy is the first week that Wild was out, a couple months before Oprah picked it for her club, it debuted at number 7 on the New York Times bestseller list. And I'll never forget that moment when my editor called me. I was on my book tour. I was in Boston about to do an event at a bookstore. And my editor, Robin Desser, called me to say that Wild had debuted at number 7 on the New York Times bestseller list. And I remember hanging up the phone and crying with joy and looking out the window and thinking, you know, here I am. I'm on the mountaintop like this. Now I have exceeded any dream I had for myself as a writer to be, you know, in the top 10 on the New York Times bestseller list.
Of course, yes.
I didn't know that there was a lot more to come. By then, Reese had already optioned the book for film, but Oprah hadn't called me yet, and all the other good things that would happen later hadn't happened yet. But I just remember feeling so grateful and so wowed, and I thought that that was as big as it was going to get. And then things got bigger.
Yeah, that was big, though. That was very big.
What was really interesting, if I just might add, like I said, Tiny Beautiful Things was published only 4 months after Wild. And so what did happen is, you're right, Wild was number one on the New York Times bestseller list all that summer. That was the summer that I, you know, did the special with Oprah and all of those things. But meanwhile, I was on my second book tour of the year, on my Tiny Beautiful Things book tour, in these bookstores just packed with people who had read Wild. And I was presenting Tiny Beautiful Things. I'd say like, okay, wait, I know. I just published this other book a few months ago, but here's my Dear Sugar book. So it was actually a cyclone meets a hurricane, meets a tornado, meets every other, a typhoon, a tsunami, all the other weather things.
All the weather all things. Yeah. I read somewhere that somebody made a statue. You were in a statue of, what was the statue about?
There's a statue of me. I know, it's really absurd. I mean, it's wonderful. I'm so honored. These wonderful sculptors are on this mission. It's called Statues for Equality. And they're Australian sculptors who essentially are saying, listen, there are so many statues of men, enough, let's have some statues of women. And so they just selected a lot, you know, and they're still doing this project. They've selected several women who they admire, and they made statues of them. When I got the email from them asking if they could make a statue of me, I at first thought it was sort of like a joke or something, but yeah, they were serious. And I love my statue. It was first in New York City for a couple of years. My family and I went and visited it. And there's nothing like visiting a statue of yourself.
Of yourself, yeah.
Yeah. And now it's in upstate New York in this really cool statue park. I haven't visited it in its current location, but I've seen it. It's really cool.
That sounds very cool. I like firsts. So I think you're the first advice columnist we've ever had and the first person with a statue of themselves.
That's so right. That's
double
right.
Firsts. Very exciting. Now, awesome. Meanwhile, just Liz, you are at this point in 2012, you are not yet in Reese World, but you're going to be in Reese World.
Yes, I was in ABC Drama World. I was in like Nashville Revenge World.
I mean, I don't want to make this embarrassing, but is Wild and all of this on your radar, or are you just eyes on these shows that are, I'm sure, very time consuming?
Oh, no. Wild is very much on my radar. I read Wild as soon as it came out. I read Torch right after I read Wild. And then
that's
I was
the first novel, yeah.
Yeah. And then I was gifted Tiny Beautiful Things. Cheryl was very much on my radar. I loved her as a writer, and she's heard me say this many times, but my son is named Wilder, and it was very much inspired by Wild and the Mary Oliver quote at the beginning of Wild. So when Lauren Neustetter at Reese's company asked me if I knew Cheryl Strayed, I said I did very well.
I think we're getting a third first for Cheryl, possibly. I don't know if anybody else has had a child named after a book.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. Yeah. And her son, Wilder, who is so amazing. I had the opportunity to share with him some stories from the Pacific Crest Trail. And now, you know, he doesn't know it yet, but I have a plan. In about a decade, we'll go hike the Pacific Crest Trail together, at least some of it. I would love to do that with Wilder, Liz.
Oh, my gosh.
Good plan. Yeah. So when this became a TV thing, you, Cheryl, you took a swing at writing the script yourself. How did that go?
Yeah, I took one. My husband and I, Brian Lindstrom and I, and of course, we became dear friends with Reese and Laura Dern as we were making Wild. There was this original kind of team that came together and said, let's make this into a TV show, starting with really, I always had a sense that this book could be a TV show. And there are so many directions, of course, you can go with that. And so I did. I wrote a pilot. My husband and I wrote one together. And I felt like we wrote a really solid and good script. But as you know, Well, I was going to say the film and TV world, but let's face it, the entire writing world, whether it's books or publishing or film and television, you can write something that you think is really strong and viable, and then the people publishing or making those things can have less enthusiasm. And so it wasn't so much we got to know, we got to, yeah, let's think about this more, maybe. The other thing is, like, when Reese and I were in early talks about this, I was like, look, I'm not going to move to LA. I'm not going to be a showrunner. I really enjoy writing scripts. I've written a couple of feature length scripts and, you know, I don't want to be a showrunner. So I knew pretty much immediately that I needed somebody to lead the way, somebody who knew a lot about television writing. And Reese just, she has incredible instincts and she knows me, of course. So she knows the kind of person I would love. And she knew Liz and I would get on swimmingly. And so she asked me to meet with Liz and consider the idea of Liz creating the show and being the showrunner.
Cheryl, when Liz came into the picture, I mean, do you feel like you got a takeaway from it? Like, oh, if I were going to do this again, having been doing this with Liz, I would do X, or not necessarily?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't think so. I mean, I think that actually the opposite is true, that I feel really grateful that I trusted my instincts. And I don't just mean that first take that was like, okay, Liz seems like a good person. Liz is a good writer. You know, I did trust that. And that's where we began. But pretty instinctually from the beginning, Liz and I just had a very drama-free, seamless, loving collaboration. So, you know, Liz was very much the leader and the creator and her, you know, the visionary. And yet she always included me and we always had great conversations. I just feel I wouldn't do anything differently. I feel really lucky that I got to collaborate with Liz. It all went really well.
Well, Reese has good instincts, I guess. We have some evidence of that, you know, just a little bit. Liz, by the time you get to doing this show, you've done multiple things, I think, with Reese.
Yes, I had. I mean, namely, Little Fires Everywhere was the big show that I was able to do with her, and Hello Sunshine and Show Run. And I really value that collaboration. And I really love working with Reese.
I saw somewhere where somebody asked you why you used that title, and you said that sometimes you're like little fire, little beautiful things, little. I have to admit, I've done a bit of that myself. I'm like, what is it called? The tiny little objects? But you chose that title. I don't know if that was both of you feeling the same way or one of you making that argument.
You know, it's funny. It definitely is. People get very riled up by the three, you know, Pretty Little Liars, Pretty Young Things, A Million Little Pieces, like it, Little Fires Everywhere. Like, people definitely have a reaction to it, but Tiny Beautiful Things existed long before many of those other things.
Yeah, no, I think Tiny Beautiful Things is, I mean, it's the title column of the book.
Yeah, and it had to be.
I had never, you know, when I wrote that column, first of all, you know, I challenge anyone who thinks that Tiny Beautiful Things is kind of a twee phrase to actually read the column in the book and read the book, that it's actually a very gritty thing. It's in reference to a very gritty realization.
This is, to be clear, the Dear Sugar column where you
exactly
wrote, you responded, and that's where the name comes from. Yeah. And it was not twee.
Never did I know that years in the future it would fall into the hands of this woman who'd made Little Fires Everywhere. And then, you know, Reese, of course, there's also Big Little Lies. So it is, right. There's a lot of, you know, I didn't know that it would be in this sort of canon of three word titles,
right,
with like little or tiny in them. But it is, it just kind of makes me smile. But I'm going to guess that Liz aspires to make her next show not be three little tiny
three
words.
Little words.
I'm either going to only do it or I'm going to never do it.
We're at that fork in the road. We'll soon see, I suppose. Coming up after the break, Liz Tigelar shares why her early years working at Hulu were like a red cup party. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Hulu's new series, Tiny Beautiful Things, is based on Cheryl Strayed's 2012 collection of essays derived from her years writing the Dear Sugar advice column. Reese Witherspoon's production company, Hello Sunshine, matched Strayed with producer and showrunner Liz Tigelar to adapt the book. Tiny Beautiful Things follows struggling wife and mother Claire, played by Katherine Hahn. At one point, Claire catches her teenage daughter, Ray, having sex with two high school friends. When she tries to intercede, she finds herself in a heated conversation with one of those friends, Montana, who coolly tells Claire that Ray is in love with her.
Do you have any idea how lucky you are to be loved by her? I would kill to have a ounce of that love, and she wastes it on you? What kind of name is Montana? Who are you? Brad Pitt and the river runs through it thinking everyone wants to you because you have great hair?
Did I read that this was a stage play at some point?
It was. You know, Tiny Beautiful Things, right about the time that the first team that was, you know, selling the TV rights, right around the time that was happening, I got an email from the director, Thomas Kail, who said, I read your book and I really think it'd be a cool play. And he, soon after that, gave the book to Nia Vardalos. She read it, and the two of them then tracked me down, and I met up with Nia in LA. We had a conversation about doing the play adaptation, and they did. Nia adapted it beautifully, and she played the role of Sugar at the Public Theater in New York when it premiered. It was, and now it's, you know, it's in stages all over the world, really.
That's just amazing. I wonder, you know, at this point, you've seen multiple iterations of yourself. And I know that this show is not meant to be biographically you. It's based on your experience in life and losing your mother at a young age and writing this advice column. But I mean, at this point, you've seen yourself portrayed in a statue by Nia Vardalos, by a version of you by Katherine Hahn. I always wonder what that's like. You know, when Steven Spielberg had the Fablemans come out, and that kid who played him as a young man has so much of his physicality, I thought, how weird is it for Steven to look through a lens and see himself, you know, a version of himself? So I wonder how that was for you.
It's surreal. It's absolutely the most surreal experience of my life to see different people play different versions of me. Also, Sarah Pidgeon, who's in Tiny Beautiful Things, plays the younger version of our Sugar, the younger Claire, very much plays, you know, this flashback scenes very much are autobiographical. Katherine Hahn's Claire has a lot less in common with me. But it is, you know, she still writes the Dear Sugar column, which I write, you know, so it is very interesting, surreal, moving, sometimes hilarious. And most of it is like, I think that I can't quite ever absorb it or take it in. And when I'm really thinking the most kind of clearly and expansively about it, what I think is, this is to me what I've always believed about story, is that when we tell the truth about ourselves, when we write with transparency and vulnerability, and I guess a kind of fearlessness, what happens is, while we're telling a very personal experience about ourselves, what we're ultimately and more importantly doing is telling that universal human story. And so every time I see another person playing me or Sugar, I think, well, this is always what we're all doing, right? That we live our lives originally, but the experiences we have, the big significant experiences we have, are timeless and universal, and they transcend every divide. And so I love that I get to kind of feel that in action in the form of all of these people playing versions of me.
Mm. Liz, I have to ask you a Hulu question. I read a quote. You've said that Hulu had been your home for so long. When you got there, it was like a Red Cup party in college. Everyone was just kind of boozy and enthusiastic, like, let's do this television. And now, you know, fast forward, we don't even know who's going to own Hulu in the near future. It's different. And I imagine, in a way, I know you don't want to say anything bad about Hulu, and I don't want you to say anything bad about Hulu, but it's got to be a little bit bittersweet to see it grow and become a thing, and then it becomes, you know, its fate is now, is it going to be Comcast? Is it going to be Disney? You know, what is Bob going to do? All of that swirling around. And I know, in addition with these layoffs that are going on, I've talked to people at Hulu who are just, you know, not having a great time. So I'm just wondering what it's like now.
Yeah, I mean, the layoffs are heartbreaking, and your heart just goes out to everybody who is going through the stress of that, at no fault of their own. I think, you know, Hulu was like a Red Cup party, and that's what I loved it. You know, it had that kind of startup vibe when I first got there. And I think, like everything, you grow up and you have to, you know, if it's my own evolution from Red Cup parties, then, you know, you go get your first job and put on your pantyhose and try to contain it a little more.
Right.
this is in the 90s. But yeah, so, I think it's changed over the time that I've been there, but it's evolved. And I think that also the programming has evolved, and it's been really exciting. I love Hulu. I hope it stays right where it is, because I love it where it is. It's been one of my very favorite places to work for so long, and I hope to continue being there. I think the thing that hasn't changed with Hulu since its Red Cup party days is that there's just like a real sense of family and community and pride. They're like kind of closet nerds. They call themselves hooligans. They do Huluween. You know, there's like a little Hulu culture that's like super campy and like dorky and sweet. And I think it's so awesome. And so, you know, so many people there are family to me and my wife, Allison. It's not just professional relationships. It's really deep friendships. So, you know, we've all grown up, and I hope we'll get to stay family, you know, professional family.
Yeah, I mean, Hulu's punching above its weight, really, I think, in terms of bringing great stuff to TV. So we'll keep our fingers crossed, I guess, that in some shape or form, that essence of Hulu stays in the world, because it is wild times in the industry right now, as I hardly need to tell you. So what are we doing next? Are you guys going to go your separate ways? Liz, what do you have on tap?
I'm just going to cling to Cheryl forever. I feel like, you know.
That was my answer, Liz. That was my answer.
Damn it. Well, my company, Best Day Ever, that I share with Stacey Silverman, we have another limited series for Hulu called Under the Bridge that we're shooting now, starring Riley Kehoe. And I've sold stuff. We supervise writers who've sold stuff. And so we are, you know, writing and hoping for more and are excited about what's coming up. Obviously nervous about the writer's strike and what will have to be paused. But yeah, really optimistic for the future. I mean, Tiny Beautiful Things was a dream of mine too. I was later into the process. Certainly I came on board an already formed team, but it felt like such a wonderful team to be a part of. And it's felt so satisfying to, you know, be a part of guiding this show from book to screen, basically. I've loved the collaboration with Cheryl, and I feel so proud of what the show is and what the show taps into. So, you know, what I'll be doing next is looking for something that feels like that again.
Mm. And what about you, Cheryl?
Well, I have my hand in two worlds, as you know. I am working on my next book, and I also have a couple of projects in various stages of development in Hollywood. So that's been really fun over these last few years to get more involved in writing scripts and to really see how this world is made. To be in the writer's room on Tiny Beautiful Things was quite an education. And so, yeah, I just keep writing in all the different forms I write and stay close to Liz, both professionally and personally. We did hatch a friendship in the midst of all this too. So that's been really wonderful.
It sounds like it. I hear the sincerity. Cheryl Strayed is the executive producer of Tiny Beautiful Things, which is based on her book of the same name. Liz Tigelar is the creator, showrunner, and executive producer of the series. Tiny Beautiful Things is now streaming on Hulu. Thank you both so much for coming along and telling us about this amazing collaboration.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Kim. It was nice talking to you.
And that's The Business. Joshua Farnham produced and edited today's program with help this week from John Meek and Ray Guarna, who mixed the show. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW shows on kcrw.com or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.